Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
9:09 as we matriculate our way through this Tuesday morning, April the 15th, which is, I guess you know, tax day. So you got to do whatever you got to do. With that, we just heard a little bit from Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans. He was pretty clear in his opinion. We're going to be joined by him right now, as a matter of fact, to talk about the replacement for David Griffin and the Pelicans. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on to talk some hoops here.
Yeah, let's talk about David Griffin. I met him and spoke with him a couple of times, and he's a very nice man. But let's go back and look at, because you got to figure out where you were and how you got from there to here before you can figure out where you go from here to there, right? So let's talk about David Griffin looking back, talk about his history with the Pelicans and where maybe the failures were. Because, again, I think he's a nice man, but sometimes being nice is not enough, being a nice guy, right?
No, like it's about winning games in the NBA, and I think when you look at the Zion Williamson and David Griffin tenure so far, these past 6 years, they just haven't done enough winning and haven't had the type of success that they wanted. And you can point to specific, you know, roster mismanagement moves by David Griffin, holding on to Brandon Ingram too long, not trading him sooner, you know, maybe signing and trading for Devontae Graham and then using 4 second-round picks to get off of that bad contract that they gave him, not acquiring the center that they've needed, or even moving on from Dyson Daniels, who might win Defensive Player of the Year this season. But really the biggest, I think, mistake in David Griffin's tenure, which is what has led the team to this point, was that he didn't get it right with Zion Williamson early. And Zion Williamson came in as an 18-year-old number one overall pick, hyped up beyond belief, but that lacked some of the professionalism that he needed to have and some of the structure around him to kind of become one of those all-time greats and lead this team to the type of success that they wanted. It was evidence that, you know, he wasn't taking the offseason seriously and things like that. And while that's not David Griffin's fault necessarily, you still got to connect with your star player and get their buy-in and put the right type of infrastructure around him. And that was something that the team failed to do early on in Zion's tenure here. And I think that's led to a lot of the missed games from Zion and the lack of success that the team has wanted. And while a lot of that's on Zion and he needs to shoulder that blame, it's still on your lead basketball decision maker to make it work in the first place. And so you could almost say that David Griffin is a bit of a victim of Zion Williamson.
I want to talk about that a little bit more. What could have or should have David Griffin have done? And if nothing, as you said, that he's a victim of Zion Williamson, then does that go to the selection to begin with? Take me through all of that.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at Zion Williamson, right, like he, when it comes to, say, evaluating coaches in front office, you're judged on results. That's what this is. It's a results-oriented business. You can talk about process and all that, but you're going to be judged by your wins and losses, playoff trips, playoff victories, things like that. And they just haven't had that success here in New Orleans like they wanted. Yeah. But the coach can't make players play. The front office can't make players play. And when you have multiple seasons of Zion Williamson, three or four of his first 6 years in the league, he's played under 30 games or fewer. You're just not going to win very many games when it's an 82-game season like that if your star players aren't available. We can talk about Zion Williamson's talent, and he has it tremendously. When he played this year, he looked absolutely phenomenal, but it was only 30 games out of 82. And so that's going to lead you to a bad season, I think. That's not directly David Griffin's fault. That's not directly head coach Willie Green's fault, but they have kind of a factor into it, too. And one of the things that I have long said is Zion Williamson is so talented that if I were running the team, I'd be willing to go down with the Zion Williamson ship trying to make it work. And ultimately, that's kind of what happened to David Griffin. Rather than trading Zion earlier on in his career, maybe when Zion's value was higher, they stuck with him and trying to build around him. And he just missed too many games, and it's led to bad seasons.
I've spoken with people that know basketball and have coached basketball, and they have this theory out there, and you may have heard it, that, as you mentioned, structure around Zion, that there's something about Zion's structure that they predicted, and I remember when it happened, they predicted that he wasn't going to be a guy that would be able to be available a lot, that the way he was put together physically wasn't lent to be a long-term NBA player or to put in a lot of court time during the season. Have you heard that and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've seen that that's been an issue for him. You know, he has regularly not shown up to the beginning of the regular season training camp in kind of the shape that you want him to be in, the conditioning that you want him to be in. And you're seeing him usually throughout the season kind of play himself into game shape. And that's something that's held the team back. You know, when you look at the injuries, particularly these hamstring injuries that he has suffered repeatedly at this point in time, you know, is that due to, you know, dumb luck, or is that due to his lack of preparation or taking care of his body? And no one was expecting him to come in, you know, as an 18-19 year old to the NBA and doing all the things that LeBron James does and started doing, you know, year 10 in his career, 15-20, right, where he famously spends $1 million plus every year just taking care of his body so he can be on the court and be available. You know, it took LeBron a number of years to kind of get to that point and get to that level of, like, professionalism. But, you know, we've seen interviews with Zion Williamson in the past where he kind of laughed, like, at stretching and players saying they stretch to keep themselves, you know, loose and avoid injuries. And Zion's kind of laughing, like, why are you doing that? That seems kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. And when we look at it through that kind of lens, did that lead to a lot of the issues that he's had out there on the court? And when these same issues keep repeating themselves over and over and over again, that's where I think we can kind of point to Zion and say, hey, like, it's not roster mismanagement. It's not just coaching that's an issue here in New Orleans. It's Zion, the player, as well. And I even think he'd own up to some of that. And he has in the past. And you saw this year start to look a little bit different from him. And if this team wants to compete in the playoffs next season or build a winner going forward, they're going to need to rely on Zion being the most professional version of Zion. That's still a bit of an open question, even if we've seen incremental improvements trying to get there.
I want to get back to the victim thing, Jake. And what I mean by that is, what ultimately, when it comes to an NBA player and management, I mean, you can't attach somebody to the guy 24/7 during the offseason and everything else, make sure he's eating right, doing this, doing that, can you?
No, exactly. And I think one of the things that you've seen the team try and do is try and kind of put in some of that structure, and it's worked and hasn't worked. And look, this job of building a competitive team, particularly around a star player like this, can be really, really difficult. And sometimes it's just as simple as that of, like, the job's hard. You know, they rookie year for Zion Williamson, and they brought in someone like J.J. Redick, who had a winning pedigree throughout the NBA, who had played at Duke, so had that connection with Zion Williamson. They brought in Trajan Langdon to be the general manager, a former Duke guy too, hoping that having that connection to him would allow him to learn from those guys, listen to those guys. And they've tried various things to just put leadership around the team to kind of set that example. Trading for C.J. McCollum is a good example of that too. This is the guy who's the head of the NBA Players Association. So he's kind of the consummate professional that you would hope Zion would model himself after. And it just hasn't always stuck with Zion Williamson when it comes to that. And look, they even tried it with the head coach. You know, when Zion was a rookie, they had Alvin Gentry, who's famously a laid-back players coach, not doing a ton of practices, or if they are practicing, it's just a short little quick practice. And they replaced him with more of a disciplinarian in Stan Van Gundy. And that led to Zion Williamson's best season, arguably, in terms of health and play that we've really seen from him before. And that was just his second year in the league. But Stan Van Gundy didn't mesh with Brandon Ingram, who's now no longer on the team, but that created some odds there too. So it was a big puzzle with complex moving pieces that they've just been trying to all fit together and haven't just found the, you know, the magic components to that sort of thing.
That's a great explanation. And when you go look at the bottom line, you got a 24-year-old that you've already paid $115 million that you have limited control over. So it's really all up to him at this point. Would you not agree?
I think at this point it's on Zion Williamson if the light is going to kind of go off or not. And look, he's going to have a career in the NBA, but if you want to become an all-time great, it comes down to winning. And it means winning multiple titles, right? The NBA's rings culture is what we joke about with it, where it's how many titles do you have? That's ultimately sometimes the most important thing. And if he doesn't get one, he's not going to go down as an all-time great. And some people are okay not being an all-time great. Some people are fine just kind of treating the NBA like a job. Let me go out and make as much money as possible, go home, enjoy my offseason with my friends and family. I'll come back the next day and do the job that I kind of need to do. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to go down as one of the top players and you have that drive, that desire, it takes more than what we've seen from Zion Williamson so far. And to his credit, I think you saw some of that changing a little bit this season. 30 games because of a hamstring injury, and they shut him down for tanking purposes at the end of the year. But he was competing on defense. That's not something that he's done through his first 5 years until this year. He was actively trying on that side of the ball, and that's where you expend a lot of energy. So if you're looking at a player being lazy, something like that, they don't give it their all on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to save it for trying to score points and kind of putting up those like glory numbers in a sense like that. But Zion was competing on the defensive side of the ball in a lost season for New Orleans. That at least shows that there's something there, and maybe things are turning around for him in the way that you want him to be.
It's time to look in the mirror and say, look, God gave me this size, this ability. I've got all the money I need for the rest of my life. Where do we go from here? What do I want to do from here? If not Willie Green, if not David Griffin, who? He's gone. Who? Who are you looking at? If not Joe Dumars, who?
You know, so the big rumor right now is Joe Dumars being a serious front runner for this job, and it was reported yesterday by ESPN that, look, they might want to try and get this deal done at the end of the week, and I was listening to the show before I came on here, and they played the clip from Sports Talk last night where I said, Joe Dumars would be a lazy hire, and that is not at all what the team should do. Maybe you end up hiring. I'm okay with that, but you need to go through an exhaustive process to find the right person to lead this team. Maybe it's Joe Dumars, maybe it's not, but right now it doesn't seem like the Pelicans are going through a process. They're more or less just going to give this job to Joe Dumars because he's friendly with ownership and people in high-ranking positions within the Saints and Pelicans, and to me it's such an inflection point for this franchise where you need to kind of chart the course for the next 5 to 10 years. You need to get someone with a clear vision and allow that person to go and execute it. And if you're just handing the job to someone because they're kind of a friend, that is not a good process for hiring someone. You want the most qualified person, not someone who just is from the state of Louisiana and they kind of default into the job there. Maybe that's Joe Dumars, maybe it's not, but if they just hand him the job, that is a lazy process and something that would make me massively concerned about the state of this franchise. If you go through all of this and you interview a guy like Calvin Booth, who was just let go by the Denver Nuggets, who built the team that won a title just 2 years ago, or you get someone like Bob Myers, who built up that dynasty of the Golden State Warriors, at least interview those people or try and get interviews with those folks rather than just shoehorning somebody into this position because you like them. And I think that's something that the Pelicans really need to look at. You mentioned introspection and kind of looking yourself in the mirror in terms of Zion Williamson. I think this franchise needs to do the same thing and really understand where they are, what they need to do going forward. Find someone with a clear vision for that. Align everyone from ownership, front office, coaching, players to that vision, and give that person the freedom to go out and execute that vision. I'm worried the Pelicans aren't going to kind of do that, and that makes me worried about the next 5 years with the team, truthfully.
Yeah, you know what? As you say that, it's kind of like Zion as a team in microcosm, where it's like, okay, we're making money now. What do we want to do? How good do we want to be? How far do we want to take this thing? Take me real quick in the time we have left, Jake. From GM on down the line to Willie Green to even Zion and what next year is likely to look like.
You know, it's going to depend on who they hire, or at least it should depend on who they hire. We've heard some rumors that it's going to be Joe Dumars and that ownership is going to force him to keep Willie Green because they like Willie Green. look, whoever is hired for this, it's Zion Williamson and Willie Green's future should be up to them and them alone to own and make that decision. I think you probably need some fresh blood on the coaching bench. It just hasn't worked under Willie Green. We've seen him kind of fall into some of the same mistakes that he's made over his tenure here. You know, to his credit, he has never lost the locker room. The team has never quit on him, and I think that's a really important thing to look at. The players have a lot of respect for Willie Green, and sometimes that's the most important quality you need in a head coach. But ultimately, that needs to be up to David Griffin's replacement, and that's the process that the Pelicans should follow. Same with Zion Williamson. There's reasons to keep him because of his top-end talent, but look, it's been a roller coaster, and maybe you just want to get off this roller coaster and this maddening ride, because I think a lot of people would say it has not been fun so far. This is sports. It should be entertainment, too. You should have fans enjoying themselves going to games. This season definitely wasn't that, so I think that's why they felt the need to make a change and really shake things up, and maybe there need to be more changes and more shakeups coming.
To hire a GM without giving them control over the coach seems like you're just heading for failure. You're driving a Titanic toward the iceberg.
Absolutely. You look at it with the Memphis Grizzlies and the Denver Nuggets recently, who both fired their head coaches really late in the season in moves that were largely panned to kind of across NBA pundits around the country, right? You need alignment between your front office and your head coach, and when that alignment fails or breaks, and there's nothing to say that David Griffin and Willie Green weren't aligned, but you just have to have that. And if you hire a GM in, and then Willie Green coaches out next season, then the GM fires him to bring in their own guy and get that alignment in a year, you just wasted a year. And there's no reason to do anything like that to save people's feelings or because you have, you know, a strong personal connection to someone. It's about winning in the NBA. You want to build the right kind of culture that is people first with that too, but you still got to win and you got to get results, and you don't want to make short-sighted mistakes that set your franchise back 1, 2, or 3 years or anything like that.
Look, I get it. If you want the money, I understand that side of it, but responsibility without authority never, ever succeeds, ever. Hey, thank you. I appreciate your time, and I hope we talk to you again soon, Jake.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Tommy.
You bet. Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, and also interesting to look at it as, you know, Zion looking at himself in the mirror and the franchise looking at themselves in the mirror like, okay, we have this. We're making this. Now, how far do we want to go? 924, we'll take a break, come back, talk to Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, licensed clinical forensic neuropsychologist, about 931, 29 till 10. Interesting conversation with Jake Madison, host of Locked On Podcast. Now, keep in mind, everything with the Pelicans, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know who the Pelicans are talking to, who they're not talking to, who they were talking to before. Because I guarantee you, any organization that's worth its salt, you don't just make a move and not have thoughts, preliminary conversations with who your next person's going to be. It just never happens. I got people lined up waiting for my job right now, I can guarantee you that. Tim, you haven't heard anything, have you? Good. Hey, you ready to go to a party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Today's password is crawfish. Crawfish. Go to WWL.com/contest. Register to win. It's that easy. Don't miss your chance to win. All you have to do is listen at 9 o'clock, noon, 3, and 6 for the Jazz Fest code word of the day to see amazing artists like Pearl Jam, Dave Matthews Band, John Fogerty, Lil Wayne and the Roots, Casey Musgrave, Harry Connick Jr., and more. Good luck. Happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. We're getting ready to talk about mental health with Dr. Judy O, our friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Good morning, Dr. Judy. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Let me get to this quickly. Somebody texted and said, we're going to talk about Kyron Lacey, and somebody texted and said, I didn't hear anyone talking about the person he killed in their family. Well, I'm going to tell you the whole story right now, and it goes back to an accident that happened in December where Kyron Lacey was traveling on Highway 20 very fast in a designated no-passing zone. Witnesses say he was recklessly passing multiple vehicles at a high rate of speed, crossing the center line, and he killed somebody.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account. The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In a collision, and as a result, he fled the scene, so nobody knows what condition he was in when he was driving, and I'm not going to speculate on that, but he was booked with negligent homicide. So fast forward to earlier this weekend when he was involved in a domestic incident. I'll let it go at that. And then that led to a police chase. And in the course of the chase, he pulled out a gun and shot himself in the head. And is a guy with all the talent in the world, a bright future ahead of him. I'm going down before the negligent homicide arrest. And now all of a sudden, it's all gone. And his parents took to social media and said, you got to, I'm going to read this here. Young parents, start talking to your kids at a very early age and make sure they are confident and comfortable confiding in you. Don't be cool with I'm all right or I'm good when you know deep down something isn't right. Mental health is real, and for the most part, it's invisible. Don't ignore the signs, even if they may seem small. So we're not in any way discounting the person whose life was lost with the reckless driving. But I will say this, I have already made in my life bad decisions when I was an older person driving too fast that could have easily led to something like that. I have already driven under the influence younger in my life when I shouldn't have. That, but for the grace of God, could have led to me getting in trouble. And I would just ask, before we start judging Kyron Lacy too harshly, and again, somebody lost their life with his reckless driving. I understand that. But we've all made bad decisions in our lives, but for the grace of God that could have turned otherwise. So, Dr. Judy, I guess I'll start with you. With parenting and young people and their minds the way they work, we don't think, or people when they're younger, our minds are not wired up as they are when we're 60. Are we?
No, we're not. Actually, it's very tragic on so many fronts. Obviously, the person that Kyron Lacy killed in this accident you just described, very, very sad for him and his family. And it's also very sad that Kyron Lacy died of an apparent suicide. And I think one of the things that we know about the human brain is it doesn't fully form until basically your early 30s. That's the average. So when somebody is a teenager, a young adult, all the way into their 20s and into their late 20s, their brain is still under construction, and particularly the frontal lobe. So the frontal lobe is responsible for executive functions. This is what makes us uniquely human, like being able to plan ahead, problem solve, go into new situations and know what to do, multitask when we need to, follow sequential instructions, and really importantly, impulse control, right? So think back to when you were a kid or when you were a young adult, and maybe you get into an argument with somebody and you're just ready to scream back at them, maybe even let fists fly. Now, fast forward your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you might still have an internal inclination to want to do that when somebody is rude to you, but you hold back. You do something different, right? Because our brains are able to say, well, let's control this impulse, which isn't going to lead to anything good, and let's take another course of action instead that makes sense and still allows me to have my dignity. So that's just one example of one of the most important things that your brain does not really know how to do well until you're about 30 years old.
So some people even struggle with impulse control beyond that, don't they?
Absolutely. And so there's some people who have more clinical problems, I'll say, with impulse control, and that can happen essentially at any age, right? But on the average, people's impulse control improves. And so at the very most, your brain is at least fully formed. But of course, there are personality differences. There's people with actual clinical problems with anger for different reasons that could cause impulse control to be a problem, or perhaps attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That is the impulsive hyperactive type. So those individuals, their brains just work differently from the average person, so that even once you're past the quote-unquote maturation age, you're still struggling with some of those issues, but for different reasons.
So I'm very empathetic and sympathetic to this whole situation for so many different reasons as a parent. This young man had just gifts that few people have. It was destined for a career in the NFL, had a brilliant college career, and now it's all gone. His parents are without a child. Somebody is dead. A 74-year-old person is dead as a result of reckless driving due to a bad decision. And I guess what makes me so sympathetic and empathetic is that, Dr. Judy, I have made some very bad decisions in my life that could have gone the other way. So I don't know really how to ask this question other than a lot of us don't realize how lucky we are before we judge other people when it comes to bad decisions.
All right. Well, I think, you know, sometimes
it's hard to put that in a data context, but, you know.
Right. Well, it's tough because what's behind judgment oftentimes is a couple of things, right? One is just when something's out of your control, like hearing about these tragedies that have happened, tragedies, plural, you can't do anything about it. They've already happened, right? And so sometimes judging people is a way of us to try to feel like there's some sense of control that we have, right, over something that's so sad and so needless. And when you judge somebody, it's like it's an action, right? You're making a decision to make an opinion about somebody. And that gives you a sense of empowerment when really, truly in these situations, we don't have any power, sadly. The other thing is sometimes judging people, and I think that this happens subconsciously, we're not doing it on purpose all the time, makes you feel better about yourself. Like, well, I would never do something like that. How dare this person? You know, and it's weird, but it maybe in a weird way, it's a little bit of a self-esteem boost when we judge other people's bad behaviors. But what we really should know is that you never know what somebody is dealing with on the inside, what they're struggling with, you know, whether or not overall they were a kind, empathetic person and they just made some terrible decisions that cost people's lives, clearly. Mm. But it's still on the backdrop of perhaps this was still a person that was a lovely person that was redeemable and clearly was loved by his family and friends who are grieving him right now. We don't have all the information and we're probably never going to get it, right? I have had friends who have died by suicide, Tommy, and you know, among our friend circle, we try to talk about it and we say, well, maybe it's because they were going through this thing or that thing, but you know what? We won't ever know. We won't ever know why they chose to do it. It's easy just to say, oh, maybe they had problems in their relationship or maybe they had problems with their job. But a lot of people have problems with their relationship and their job and they don't take their own lives. And so I don't think you're ever going to get a satisfying answer.
It's just, I guess this really just for some reason touched me, Dr. Judy, because I watched him play and it just is such a sad situation. And including the person whose life was lost by just driving on a highway and somebody doing something stupid in a car, driving too fast. And Lord knows we see that every day on the highways. Let me take a break. We'll talk about parents and mental health with their kids when we come back. Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. 941 Traffic Now, WWL. It is 9:46, 14 till 9. Every other Tuesday, we talk about mental health and focus on it. Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, our guest, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, a mom herself, author of numerous books. And we thought with the tragedy involving Kyron Lacey, both from the victim, the person that he killed on a highway with reckless driving, and I don't know what he hit and run and took off after the accident, so nobody knows what condition he was in, but he was facing negligent homicide charges. Then in Houston, after a domestic incident where he fired a gun during a police chase, put the gun to his head and killed himself. And his parents took to social media and said, young parents, start talking to your kids at a very early age. Make sure they're confident and comfortable confiding in you. That was what Kenny Lacey said. Now, obviously, this young man was in a heap of trouble with the negligent homicide charge. But at some point, Dr. Judy, and going to the point of, and one thing I tried to do as a parent is, you know, you can always talk about punishment later and everything else. But the typical example of if you're in high school, and you go out and you get drunk, call me. If you feel unsafe, call me. I am the safe place. I am the one you can count on, and then we'll deal with the rest of it later. How important is it that parents get that message to their kids?
really important because obviously, you know, you have to expect that your child is going to make some mistakes at some point in their life. And you want them to be able to come to you, to confide in you, to consult with you. And like you said, at some point we'll talk about the consequences. But first of all, let's deal with this present situation. They need to know that even if you are going to have boundaries, even if you are going to talk about discipline, but the very first thing is knowing that they can trust you no matter what happens.
We'll get through it. We'll deal with it no matter what. There are going to be consequences, but we'll get through it. The most important thing is to take yourself out of the threatening situation or doing harm to yourself or whatever it happens to be. What are some maybe warning signs or what age groups that parents can really start looking out for when it comes to their kids? And going back to what Kenny Lacey said about his late son, that don't just accept I'm all right or I'm good when you know deep down something isn't right. How does a parent get past that? No, everything's good, everything's great, when they know it really isn't.
Right. Yeah, it's hard because sometimes you're saying, okay, I'm not going to keep crying. They're already saying it's fine. I'm going to leave it alone. You know, I feel like we have talked about this before in that parental monitoring is the number one thing that helps your child and your growing child as they grow into adulthood on a positive trajectory, both in terms of school and in terms of relationships, as well as how they do in their jobs and just general adulting skills. I mean, it's related to so many different things. And parental monitoring, very simply defined, just means you know what your kid is up to and you're always asking them questions to know about their life and how they're doing. That's really what parental monitoring is. And so obviously, as they get to a certain age, they're going to push back a bit. They're going to say you're annoying. They may even use other choice words or get kind of aggressive with you, but you can't let up on that quest, essentially. Like, well, you're still going to have to tell me. If you want to keep your phone with you, as long as you're in my house, I need to know who you're calling. I need to know who you're going to be with tonight. I need to see your social media. You know, you can't give up on trying to know all you can about them and their life, especially as they're growing, even if they push back and even if they just say, sure, I'm fine, just leave me alone. And and also, even when things seem okay, because people who tend to, sadly, commit suicide, for example, or even have suicidal thoughts, they tend to be the ones that are going to say, yeah, I'm okay, and just kind of walk away. They're not going to necessarily act out all the time. They're kind of more internalized in terms of their suffering. And so sometimes the more quiet ones, you have to try to draw out even more for that reason.
Dr. Judy, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I do want to get to this. I'm a lot farther down the parenting road than are you, but you're a licensed clinical neuropsychologist. Sometimes parents, when the kids get to be 28 in the 30s, you don't know what to do because you want to help, but sometimes you just got to back off and butt out and let them figure it out for themselves and stop. Yeah, you know, I don't know. Take me through that. How do you make sure everything's all right without really inserting yourself too much into it or butting in too much?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think it's a learning process as you go through parenthood. You know, you know your child best, you know their personality, and you know what they're going to need and not need. And sometimes you have to know that it's about your own insecurities, maybe things that have happened to you when you were younger, why you're being so overprotective. So I think that a good check is just, you know, do I feel that I know enough about what's going on with them? And do I feel like I've had the opportunity to teach them as much as I can about this situation? And once you do have to just let them navigate it as well, right? But I think that the key is just asking questions and staying engaged. Like, you can let them navigate it, but after the situation, you can talk about it. You can ask them questions. You can try to impart some life lessons. But it's not about, you know, following them wherever they're going, right? You know that it's going to be overboard if you're just constantly so on them that they can't develop their own life skills. And so you have to have that balance of letting them try things out on their own, but always talking to them about it, processing it with them, and interjecting life lessons wherever you can.
As a licensed clinical and forensic neuropsychologist and a mom, would you agree with me when I say, for any people out there that are considering having kids, buckle up?
Yeah, buckle up.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that.
Buckle up.
Very, very true.
Get ready.
Very true.
Buckle up. Thank you, Dr.
Get
Judy.
Ready,
a pleasure,
thanks,
as always. Tell Luca hi for us.
I will. Thanks, Tommy. Right, great
bet.
Talking to you.
The same as always. That's not professional advice, but buckle up. 9:53, 7 till 10. We'll find out what Noel's got planned for us when we come back on this Tuesday morning here on WWL.